Live and local.
Across the city.
And South Cambridgeshire.
This is Linda Ness.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Several local buildings have won awards from the Royal Institute of British Architects East in recognition of their architectural merit. Amongst them were Ely Museum and Churchill College, Cambridge. I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Holbrook of Cambridge architectural firm Fifth Studio, who was the RIBA East Awards jury chair. Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for joining us on Cambridge Breakfast this morning.
Good morning. Thanks.
Given the diversity of the buildings, it can't have been an easy job judging the winners of this.
Well, it was a record number of projects shortlisted this year. And for the RIBA, each one is visited by a panel of judges. So it's quite a tall order. The Eastern region is pretty extensive. It runs from the North Norfolk coast right down to Essex and the edges of London. So we covered a lot of ground and we went to see every project, and it was pretty exhausting stuff, but actually what an incredible thing to do, to go and see some wonderful architecture of different scales, different levels of complexity, you know, a real joy.
I can imagine. And what were you looking for? Is it all about innovation, about looking for different things, or is it something else? Is it about the passion, or what's it about?
Really, the thing that shone out of the projects that won this year is the diversity with which architects use their spatial imaginations and use that to really improve the spaces that people inhabit in different ways. And it made a huge impact this year in particular, because so many of the projects we visited had been lived in, had been kind of used or occupied through lockdown in different ways, and had proved to be a real refuge from the kind of situation we found ourselves in over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So that was great to see. I would say the thing that really united them was, yeah, that spark, that kind of creative idea of just doing things in an intelligent way, finding new spaces, sometimes in a very modest and straightforward way. For instance, an extension to a Victorian house, a terraced house in Cambridge, which was one of the projects, the Copper House, one of the smallest projects we visited. But really, in that case, transforming the life of a family, transforming a Victorian cellular house made of all lots of little rooms that didn't relate terribly well to its back garden into something that was full of sun and, you know, sunlight and drama, where the garden was really brought into the house. And, you know, that family in particular had really enjoyed living and working in that same space because of the kind of contemporary joined up spaces that architect found in the original house. So it didn't have to be an expensive project. We did see some pretty extraordinarily luxurious projects that are built for the next few hundred years by, say, some of the colleges in Cambridge. But the thing that really shone out was just that kind of imagination, you know, and seeing the possibility in spaces, sometimes an addition to a space and sometimes a wholly new building.
I know, I have to say, I'm absolutely addicted to these programmes on the television these days, and there's several of them where, you know, they kind of change the layout of a house. There's a big thing at the moment, isn't there, for kind of making a wall of glass onto the garden and bringing the outside in and things like that. But I wanted to ask you about lockdown. Do you think lockdown has changed our perception of our homes, you know, our shelters, and our workspaces as well?
Absolutely. Well, it brought those two things much closer together for many of us, didn't it? I mean, those of us who were lucky to be able to work from home in the pandemic, some of us still are working from home and finding that those two things are either a pleasure if you've got the space to do it, or a really terrible constraint if you don't. Just knowing how much people's working lives can infect their domestic lives if they're working out of, you know, say their bedroom, as some people are having to do. So I think those people who were working from home realized how important that environment was, so that all that time spent commuting and traveling somewhere else to a workspace was now spent in, you know, a few rooms of the house. And so I think in those terms, it made us think about our domestic environments more And increasingly, I think we're thinking about our working environment. So what are our working spaces for if you don't have to be there? I mean, many of us do have to, you know, if you're on the front line, if you're a hospital porter or you know, you're driving a bus, you've got to be at your workspace and you don't have the choice to do that. But on the other hand, people who are doing more office-based work could work from home. And I suppose we're now thinking, well, rather than just going back to normal, what are those workspaces for? And how do we make those really good to attract people back if that's what companies want to do? And what are the advantages of that? The other thing we saw that I think is really interesting and worth thinking about is the reinvention of a number of our market towns, with people who would normally be on the train, perhaps to London every morning, spending much more time and still maybe spending a few days a week working in that market town and kind of spending more money on the high street there, more time on the high street there. And a bit of a revival of, you know, perhaps commuter towns, which otherwise would just, you know, exhausted workers would return to in the evening and maybe pop into the supermarket and then collapse in front of the telly. So there's some real advantages over that that we shouldn't forget or just kind of walk away from and think, well, let's get back to normal. And there's a very compelling idea that has come from some Parisian thinkers about the 15-minute neighborhood, i.e. the idea that within a 15-minute walk, one should be able to find and access all the things you need for a good life, whether that's a kind of workspace or a good environment to go for a walk in, a bit of nature, some access to nature that we all found really important. And of course, you know, good shops to buy fresh food from and perhaps a restaurant and a bar. So, and of course, things like social infrastructure, like schools and so on. And it's a pretty good principle, actually. It's a good set of rules for how to make a good place to live in.
Yeah. And I'm really happy to hear about, you know, these market towns and the revival and the local area revival that's going on. I think that's great. You're an architect yourself. Was there something that you found unusual, interesting, new when you were looking at those projects?
I think what struck me was the diversity of things. I wasn't quite expecting that range of different sorts of things going on, from, you know, a new primary school on the edge of eastern edge of St. Neots, for instance, was very impressive, and very impressive environmentally too, one of our best environmentally performing projects, right through to, as I say, some civic projects like the Ely Museum you mentioned, which was a restoration really of a historic building on the high street in Ely, and, you know, a beautiful set of spaces to understand some of the history of that fascinating town. And in that case, to bring, you know, a really generous set of spaces that can be used out of hours by other community groups as a place to meet. So that was really terrific as a project, both working with a curator in the museum, a restoration of a historic space that had been a bit kind of obscured before then, and then this kind of new modern space that can be picked up by the Ely community. Accessing some spaces that normally it would be quite hard to get into. So the extraordinary experience of going into Magdalen College Library in Cambridge, which, you know, you can't just wander into. It's quite hard to get into that. They're tucked right in the back of the college site. But, you know, an exceptional project there, and a set of exciting spaces for people to learn and to engage with learning in. So that was quite amazing.
It must be really encouraging and exciting, both for the architect and for the project owner as well, to receive an award like this. Did you actually meet any of the recipients of these awards, or did you have a word with them at any time?
Absolutely. And that stemmed right the way from, you know, proud librarians and curators in the projects that I just mentioned, right through to domestic clients and people who are living in the house that they're proudly showing us around. And, you know, that's always a pleasure to see how involved the clients have been in a number of cases with, you know, the conversations with their architects and kind of trying to express to their architect what they wanted. And actually a couple of projects where it was the architect's own house and the architect had done quite a lot of the building work too. So, you know, maybe over many years. So that's a real pleasure to see how something has evolved and come to fruition through somebody just sitting there thinking about their own house. Yeah, some pretty amazing examples of that. And then a remarkable project in Norwich, where the house owners were both artists and working from home in studios. So the project, you know, established a working space for them in the house.
It sounds great. And it must be nice for an architect to actually see the finished product. I always feel that architects probably draw the designs up at the beginning, but sometimes perhaps never see the finished product. Thank you very much, Tom Holbrook from Fifth Studio, for joining us this morning and telling us about the Royal Institute of British Architects East Awards. It's been really interesting. Thank you.
Great pleasure.